Boy, I'm really looking forward to this hour, just not only for your questions, but some of your stories about the after-death communication. Maybe it's happened to you. We'll be back in a moment with Bill Guggenheim on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls now and perhaps some of your stories. Bill, do you travel much these days?
I go wherever I'm invited to give workshops. And because I inherited money when I was 21, and I do it for free. This is a spiritual ministry for me, and it's my delight to be able to present workshops at national conferences or any large groups. I pay all my own expenses.
Good for you. Good for you. Do you find the public is pretty receptive nowadays to after-death communication stories?
Well, when Hello from Heaven was published by Bantam Books in 1996, it was a very tentative subject. It was a new subject. Today, we're seeing newspaper stories, seeing wire stories. One was on MSNBC recently about a man. Their home was on fire, and a man, a wife, and a small child were in the home. And he pushed his wife out the window to safety, but he tried to go back to rescue his two-year-old child. And when he did, the heat was overwhelming and he was burned. But just before he went out the house himself, he looked back and he saw his two-year-old son with his deceased father and knew that his son was safe. And this was a story that appeared in the newspaper in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the Butler, Kentucky, where it occurred, and it was carried by MSNBC on the Internet. So, I mean, how much more mainstream?
That's true.
We have a quote here from Dr. Phil saying that he believes in these very much. So, I mean, you know, it's what wasn't accepted is now the acceptable. And so that's why I'm very delighted to be on your program and be able to talk about it, because it is so much more widely known and accepted, and it's comforting so many people now.
Let's get the stories. Let's get the calls. You ready?
Yes, very much.
West of the Rockies, Carol out there in Hayward, California. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi, Carol.
Hi, George. Hi, Bill. Thanks for a great show tonight.
Sure thing.
I have two questions. The first is, when I was listening to you in the last hour, you talked about how it seems that the people who have passed on are very happy and at peace. I'm wondering why they would then try to protect their loved ones from car crashes or death. If, you know, wouldn't they want their loved ones to just pass along, you know, and be happy also?
Well, stop and think. If you could, let's say you had passed on, but your husband is taking care of three children, would you want your husband to be with you, or would you want your husband to be with the three children?
In that case, with the three children, but if somebody was alone and despondent and suicidal and felt that they had nothing left to live for, why not bring them with you where they can be loved and cared for? You know,
I can understand your point of view, but the way I see it is that we chose to come to the school on planet Earth called, or the University of Life on Earth, and we may be very suicidal today, and I had suicidal feelings and thoughts in my life. I'm 69, and if I had acted upon them back then, I wouldn't be here right now. And so we don't know what's around the next curve of our road, do we?
That's true. And so it's possible then, or are you suggesting that maybe they do, and they're saying, save yourself because you have something to do next week or next year?
Yes, if you're familiar with near-death experiences, many, many people have wanted to stay in the light on the other side, and they said, and the common phrase is, it's not yet your time.
Yeah.
And they're sent back against their will, or many do choose to be back with their children. In other words, we come here, we enroll. Some people need a few credits, so to speak, and some need 4-year college or even graduate school. Who knows?
And do I have time for one more question?
Sure, Carol. Go ahead.
You. When you told the story about the eagle that flew over the family gathering,
yes,
representing, you know, possibly the gentleman from the Screaming Eagles, how is it that people who are passed on can control, I don't know what else to call it, but control wildlife or get an eagle to agree to fly over a picnic?
Fortunately, I don't have to figure out how these are done, and I don't know the answer to that one, but... These are so common to have these symbolic experiences. That was one. There's a beautiful story in our book about a young boy who was very much into nature, and I don't recall at the moment how he died, but they had his body cremated. They were taking the ashes out here in the Gulf of Mexico to release him into the water, mm-hmm. and a school of dolphins swam on both sides of the boat as the boat went out before they released the ashes, and after they did so, the dolphins swam away. I can't explain that.
Wow, that sounds lovely.
And we have something like 15 to 20 species of birds that have been involved. Keep in mind, we have 3,300 accounts in our formal research, but on our website, people have posted another 10,000 of these experiences in the last 12 years. Plus, I hear more at every workshop I go to.
Okay, I'm not doubting it. I'm just wondering, I guess, like, how would you know either?
When I don't know, I'm willing to admit I don't know how it is. I can say that there are many experiences that involve electricity, such as turning a stereo on or a radio on so you will hear the song that you associate with the one who died. Turning on lights, not just having lights go off, that's easy. It's a power failure. Turning lights on one after the other all throughout a house, even the microwave oven and the TV set and things like that. We have a case in the book where somebody, remember the touch lamps? You could touch and go on and touch twice and go off,
right.
Whatever. This man had a thing, okay? He would ask whoever it was who had died, if your answer is yes, have the light blink once. If it's no, blink twice. And he thought questions, and the blink and the voice and the lamp would blink accordingly.
Yeah, there's actually a website I saw where there's lamps that you can buy now that you think at, and the lamp will turn on. I have no idea how they figure that out. Or I didn't buy one, so I don't know if they work.
Well, I'd love to know myself. That's brand new to me.
Yeah. So, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay, next up, let's go to who is on this one? East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Yes, calling from the belly of the beast, Washington, D.C.
Ah, there you are. And I shall be there this weekend, Patrick.
Yes, how are you, George? I would like to talk about, briefly, I'd like to talk about a dream, an ADC dream, ADC dream, I call it.
Okay.
That I had about my dead grandmother.
Take
Hello?
It away. Yeah. Take
okay.
it away.
Okay. Well, this happened around the spring or summer 2004. I don't exactly know when, but I knew it was very cold. And I went to bed one night, and I wake up in the morning with my hands clasped. Now, I had a dream that I was in, because at this time we were rummaging through my grandmother's old belongings in the house. And I'm getting very emotional about this, so you have to bear with me. This happened around 2004, but she died in December 10th, 1999. And this is my mother's mother. Now, the dream was about my aunt, my mother. We're all in the house. This is the dream now. We're all in the house of our old house. My grandparents are dead at this time, so this is around 2004. We're in the house, and we're basically just getting ready for an excavation of everything that's there. And it took us years to get rid of everything. But this particular time, all of a sudden, we're in the room talking, getting rid of going through some boxes in her living room. And all of a sudden, my grandmother appears out of thin air, and she comes to me and holds my hand. For some reason or another, I drop to my knees immediately, and tears are rolling down my face. I'm like, Grandma, you're dead. You're supposed to, you're not. I said, do you think a thing like being dead is going to keep me away from my grandson? And this freaked me out. So I'm sitting here like, okay, then why are you here? She said, I came to tell you that I loved you very much. And every time she said a word, she was herself. Love, she was my other grandmother. And then you, then she was herself again. It's like her face was, as if her face was morphing. And my goodness, all of a sudden, the house shook. My mother and my aunt Phyllis are looking at me like, what's wrong? Why are you sitting there holding your hands out? So I immediately knew in the dream that they can't see her, but I can. And she was wearing the same dress that she was buried in, this very pink velour kind of satin thing that was very long. She wore it to a wedding back in the 80s of my cousin getting married. But it was a very appealing color. It's not a color I could find on any kind of a palette. Now, mind you, I'm a devout Buddhist now, and I've had a conversion about about 3 or 4 years ago. Now, we believe in reincarnation. We believe definitely that death is not the end. Your life goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened here, this is what kills me. What happened here is the rumble, all of a sudden, it's like the house shook. She looks over my head, and tears are rolling down her face. And she says, honey, I love you, but I must be going. Before I can even say anything in the dream, she darts off into the opposite direction, knocks and jumps into the wall and disappears into this beautiful pink bluish mist. And all of a sudden, my aunt, and it's like my aunt and my mother saw it in the dream. They're like, oh my God, what was that? And knocks the shelf off the wall, you know, with the records on it. Knocks everything, the records and the little figurines off, breaks everything. She jumps into the wall and just totally disintegrates into thin air. Now, the dream is over at this point. I wake up in the morning with my hands clasped in front of me. Mind you, I'm laying on my stomach, almost starfish fashion. But my hands are straight out in front of me as if they were holding someone's hands. Now, I wake up in the morning, and that morning I was supposed to meet my mother for something. She was supposed to give me something. And I met her, and I told her, I said, Mom, you got to come in the house. And she said she didn't have any time. So I went out to the car, sat in there, told her about the whole dream I had that previous night. And she looks at me knowingly, then she looks distant, and she looks at me, and she gets misty eyes. She says, Patrick, my goodness, this is your grandmother's birthday today. The day would have been her 81st or 82nd birthday. And it changed my life forever. I have since told everyone closest to me, including my new fiance, when I went to visit her in January for the first time in person, because we corresponded on Skype and a cell phone for close to a year before I met her in person, I told her about this story. And ever since I've told her, and ever since I've had this experience, I went through a tough time with the divorce. I went through a 4-year marriage of a woman that I thought I was in love with. And I'm here to tell you and all of your listeners that life is about living it to the fullest. And there is no such thing as death. And Bill Cosby, I'd love to quote him if I still have time. He said, there's no such thing as an atheist, because by God, if that ground shakes, you're definitely going to look up.
I love it, Patrick. I love it. Bill, do you want to do a little analysis on that?
I don't think there's any analysis required. The only thing I would comment on, which is shows up in the book, is that often the one who's having the sleep state, ADC, is the one who sees the, like his grandmother, but he said the other people in the dream did not see her, which is very typical.
Sure is. All right, let's go to our first-time caller line, Diane in Missouri. Hi, Diane.
Hi, I want to thank you so much for your doing on this subject. I lost my 17-year-old son, and I went to Compassionate Friends. It's a wonderful organization, and it helped me a lot. But I want to tell you my story.
Sure.
On the other hand, at Compassionate Friends, there are many stories like this, similar stories. But my story is my son's classmates invited me to their graduation ceremony. And that day I had a house full of people, family and friends, and I just was compelled to leave them all, and I had to just go to that ceremony. And it was in the local school gymnasium, and it was not air-conditioned, and the windows were open and doors were open. And just the young people had just come in, and the ceremony hadn't started yet, so there was a lot of talking still going on and things. And all of a sudden, a big hush came over the room, and first of all, my son, I always felt, was communicating with me through birds. But anyway, this big hush came over the room, and a bird flew in through the door. And it made a big circle around the students, and it went out the window above my head. And I just became so, I just sat through the whole rest of the ceremony with this big smile on my face, because I knew he was sitting there with me.
I think so, too.
Yes.
I think so, too. Bill, you don't talk about how the conversion into like an animal or some kind of a sign much. But what do you think of that?
I don't believe that our deceased loved one becomes a butterfly or a bird or a porpoise, as I said, or whatever. But I think they direct the behavior of it. And
which is very possible.
Yeah.
Very possible. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there, Catherine.
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
My sister and I lived about 600 miles apart and when my mom died. And she would come to me, and then she would go to my sister, and she would make her presence known. One time I had an employee in my car, an electrical engineer, and I was talking about my mom, and she came, and he jumped out of the moving car. And I said, "What are you doing? It's only my mom." And I didn't realize she was going to my sister at the same time. So when we communicated, I said, "Mom keeps coming to me." She goes, "Me too." And I said, "Well, we need to tell her we're okay." And that's why they come, is to tell us they're okay. And so we both told her, "We're fine, we love you," and we said goodbye, and she doesn't come. But tonight, my father came, and it was while I was listening to your show. I had a stack of books, and he knocked them over. And the first time I saw him was after he passed. I was sitting in my TV room, and he took a plant, and he just shook it. And so I called my sister to tell her that my dad was just here. And she said, "Well, he was just here, too, because I was ironing. I sat down, and the ironing cord went up and down." And George, you had a previous guest about near-death experiences, and I tried to get on, about the yellow glow, about
yes.
What is that? I know what it is. When my mother died of breast cancer, and her sister died a couple of years later of breast cancer, and when she was in the hospital, my Aunt Louise, this yellow glow appeared, and she said, "Joyce," and that was my mother, and she died. So my mother came and took her.
God, Catherine, you're a believer, no doubt.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, here's something else for everybody, the first caller. Why do they do that? Why did they come? Why don't they, why do they save people? They come to tell us they're okay. They're in body form, but they're spirits. And your first caller wanted to know why, they don't save people. Or if people have like Bill said, you have a purpose, and you have to fulfill your contract. And you don't pass until you fulfill your contract.
All right, Catherine, thanks for the story. Bill, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, there are two ways. One is the easiest way is through our website, after-death.com. And we welcome them to send us accounts of their ADCs. In all honesty, I will not be able to have time to respond to all of them. We're overwhelmed and have been for all these years.
Well, this will push you right over the top even more. Bill, stay with us. We're going to come right back. We'll take final phone calls and questions next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to do a floating format. Dr. Tim Ball joins us. I think we'll start in the first hour as we talk some science and the politics behind oil and natural resources. You're going to love that show. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Bill, when does the sequel to Hello from Heaven come out? There's always a sequel.
In my case, we want to add two more chapters to Hello from Heaven. We spent 7 years doing the research and writing, and 69, I don't want to spend seven more years doing that. And basically, we've covered 80%, 85%. And we want to revise it a little bit, but we want to include a chapter on children's experiences. We already have them in our files. We just didn't include them. And by the way, young children, even as young as a year and a half, can by their action be waving at pop and saying, "Papa, Papa, Papa," and that's what they used to call their grandfather. Or a three-year-old can come into his mother's room in the morning and say, "Auntie so-and-so was with me last night," things like that. And so people all different ages have these, but one chapter in children's, and the other are the ones when someone is actually dying. We call that the hospice chapter. And so we'd like to add those two.
That's good. Very good. Is there any area that you haven't pursued yet in the study and the research of after-death communication that you'd like to get into next?
Not I myself, but obviously there's a tremendous room for doing cross-cultural studies. In other words, in other countries, other cultures, other belief systems. I will say what's absolutely fascinated me. I was in Salt Lake City at a bookseller's convention for basically Mormon books. Mm-hmm. Betty Eady was there, who wrote Embraced by the Light, and she was a well-known Mormon and whatnot, of her near-death experience. I spoke with her a couple of times because I had met her before. And these people, once they knew what I had done, the Mormons, LDS members, came up to me and told me incredible experiences. We could have done our research in 2 to 3 years out there because their yeah. religion is so open because it's based upon revelation, and they journal all their experiences, not just after-death communication, but they journal their out-of-body experiences and their near-death experiences and encounters with angels, encounters with elders, and on and on and on. And the researchers out there have stuff to go back 150 years in exquisite detail. And people told us all kinds of stories off the record, you know, come up to me, kind of tell me, whisper to me or meet me, you know, outside or whatever. And it was wonderful. So it really depends. And also, and please, there is no racial intimations with this, but people who are black and Hispanic in our country are much more open to it than more educated white people or people like that, simply because it's part of their culture, their lore.
Let's go to our first-time caller.
Native Americans as well, of course.
Okay. First-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Yes, my name is Peggy, and I wanted to thank you for the program, and I've been waiting a long time ever since you've been on, George, to hear you talk about some things like this.
Okay, well, thank you.
And I really feel that you've been a man with a mission.
Well, we're going to continue to plot ahead.
Okay. I'd like to give you a little mini example of something that happened to me some 30 years ago. We'd moved into a new house in the country, and I was there by myself for a while, and I drove in the driveway one day. I was a teacher, and that something said to me in my head, just like he's talking about, you'll never really live in that house. And then shortly thereafter, I was cleaning in the house, and something said to me again, somebody's going to take your job away from you. Then I went to Hawaii to stay with a friend who lost her husband in Vietnam, and met my husband in July and married him in September. And it just seemed like there were a lot of things that happened to me that were beyond my control. And I've often wondered whether they were predestination, whether I was being warned. And I'd had some really sort of bad experiences with his family, into the fact where, again, at one point in time, this was a very old house. When I was staying there, they said to me in my head again, don't trust her. And I just wonder, you know, in his experiences with other people, whether he feels that this is a warning, a predestination, or just an awareness, because I've tried so long to figure out what all these things meant. I almost feel like when I look back over so many events in my life, whether they were beyond my control. And I just wonder how his experiences were with people, if they've had other things to say about this.
Peggy, I've heard many, many different types of accounts, and I would agree with you. It sounds like you have a little bit of everything there. Predestinations, warnings, you name it. And I don't think it's the house itself that's causing it, but I think you're just open to having different kinds of experiences. And you met your husband and married him shortly thereafterwards, and I hope you're happy.
Yes, we have been, but we feel like we've both been through more. The first few years of our lives were really pretty good, but after we got out and stayed with his family, the summer we got out of the military, it seemed like ever since then things were more difficult than they had to be. And I didn't know whether it was just the fact that I don't think I was welcomed into the family or what. But those are a lot of other stories, you know. It's just interesting to me because I'd love to see you all have a panel of someone like yourself and other people that are involved in similar situations with psychic experiences and so on. You know, it kind of is eye-opening because you've had so many people.
I'm saying now this humorously, so try to hear that in my voice. I think if you had a panel of 5, 10, or 20 people,
each from a different background or discipline, you'd get that many different viewpoints or answers, and you might be totally scrambled by the time.
And we'd have to bring a skeptic or two on, Bill.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You've got to do that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Have you ever gone toe-to-toe with a skeptic?
I've had a heckler in one of my audiences, and I had to ask him to please don't do this now, but I'll meet with him later. And
yeah, I mean, that's downright rude on their part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yes, the one time we were doing the research, and a man called us from, I think, Denver area, someplace in Colorado, and he was very scientific, and he wanted an explanation for everything. And I said something, and I said in just the right way that I know he got it, and it fell outside of his reality of just pure scientific explanation. And he got off the phone with me as though I had shocked him, literally shocked him with an electric current. And I wasn't being abusive in any way. I was just being very open and said it very gently, and something bigger than what he expected occurred.
But hey, by the way, I know what you were saying, and I want to make sure that you're absolutely correct in this, because I did get a couple emails. When you said that Hispanics and blacks are more open to this than educated whites, you're not saying Hispanics and blacks aren't educated. As a matter of fact, I know some folks who are more educated than some white people. I just wanted to make sure people didn't misunderstand.
I apologize. It was my phrasing. I should not have said it that way. I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was that their culture is more open. Typical public school culture here in the United States in many cases. In other words, it's within their family, within their history, within their culture that they're more open. And it's not, and it hasn't been educated out of them. In other words, they have something many other people don't have. It's a positive, not a negative.
You know, why is it, and this we can say, why is it that more folks who are PhD types don't believe in this?
They don't believe in just this. They don't believe in near-death experiences. They don't believe in out-of-body experiences. They don't believe in life after death. They don't believe in any of this because, okay, if you take science and try to, it's wonderful for the physical world, for all the physical things, for this dimension it operates. But when you try to extend it beyond the physical world into the emotional and the mental or the intellectual and into the spiritual, they have different rules. But you can't make these experiences happen at will in a laboratory any more than a person who's musical can necessarily create a concerto or a symphony sitting in a laboratory. And you can't prove love in a laboratory. You can't prove creativity in a laboratory or anything else. But they keep trying to reduce everything into the scientific mode, which is really still called the scientific theory. It's not proven. It's a theory of explaining things. And what I like is in many foreign cultures, they don't ask why. They just said what value does it have? And if it has value, then they use it. It's their pragmatists. And
all
here,
right.
The PhD people, not all of them certainly, but many of them tend to limit themselves, I believe.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bill Guggenheim on Coast to Coast. Hi, Patty.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Thank you. Very nice to meet you, Mr. Guggenheim.
Thank you.
I had the pleasure of speaking to George on the first weekend, December 2004, and I told him about an experience I'd had, but I wanted to tell you about a new one. In December 24th of that same month, I had to go to the emergency room at the local medical school here in Portland, Oregon, and it turned out that I had what they thought was a small tumor in my bladder. So then they, incidentally, in the mix of this, my mother came to see me in her ethereal state the night that I was in the hospital, and I knew she was going to come and visit me about 3 days before. She's visited me many times. But anyway.
Brought you a little faith and protection there, didn't she?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And she also used to work at that hospital.
Huh.
And I believe she still helps people, because she helped people and sat with them when they were passing. Many people that were at that hospital, unfortunately, didn't have family. And so she would sit with people and talk with them while they were, unfortunately, passing.
What a wonderful ministry.
Oh, she was an amazing person. She still is. But anyway, I'm so excited to talk to you, George. It's so exciting. This is a great show. Anyway, so I went to go have my surgery 3 days later, literally, And they thought that it was going to be just a little quarter-sized tumor that they were going to remove. So they put me under, and they were getting me ready, and they told me that I was constantly chattering at them and telling them how beautiful they all were as I was going under. And so anyway, the chief urologist is the person that conducted the surgery, which I felt very fortunate. And anyway, when they had me in the operating room, that's when they discovered that the tumor was literally encasing, my bladder was encasing the tumor like a sausage.
Oh, my.
It was so huge, and I had no idea. So instead of having a 45-minute surgery, I had a three-hour surgery.
Oh, my God.
So because it was technically supposed to be a day surgery, they wanted to keep me overnight because of the nature of the situation.
Of course, yeah.
So that night, I was in a room sharing with another lady, and I knew that my mother was going to come and see me that night. And so I was, you know, anticipating her visiting me, and so I dozed off, and I woke up, and I remember looking at the clock, and it said 3 a.m., and I looked, and I was just kind of in a halfway sitting up position, and then all of a sudden, I heard my mother's voice say, "Patty," and I kind of turned my head, and I saw her. I could see through her, of course, but I've seen her before, so it was perfectly great with me, and I looked, and I go, "Hi, Mommy," and she goes, "Don't worry, you're going to be okay," and I go, "Okay," and then she said, "Now, Patty, remember what I asked you to do a long time ago on one of our other visits?" I said, "But it's too hard, Mom." And she goes, "You have to take care of your sisters." And I go, "Oh, all right," you know, just like a kid would. And then she said, "You be good, and I'll talk to you later." And she blew me a kiss and walked through the curtains, and I said goodbye.
And now you sound fine, Patty.
I have been perfect, George. The cool thing is I never had a moment of pain or problem or anything. And I feel so sorry for people who have cancer that are suffering so terribly, because I've never suffered. I'm so fortunate.
Now, that brings up an interesting question, Bill, for you. Does the visitation have anything to do with some kind of healing power?
Certainly emotional healing is a prevalent mode. Yes, there's a tremendous amount of emotional healing. Occasionally, I can't think of a particular experience at the moment, but there has been some physical healing as well, yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Steve in the Bronx, you're on the air. Hi, Steven.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good.
Okay. I just want to quickly tell you a story that happened to me about 2.5 years ago. My grandfather had passed away, and I was actually in the hospital with him when he died. And later on that week, when we had the wake, me and my wife brought my, at the time, she was a 2.5-year-old, Adelina, to pay her respects. And when she walked in, she looked at myself, my wife, and my grandmother and said, "The angels are with Papa. The angels are with Papa." And we were all stunned there momentarily. And then from time to time, she'll come into the house, you know, come out of her room, and she's 5 now, and she will tell me that Papa's happy, Papa's so happy, and he's with the angels, and just really caught me off guard, you know. She was so small at the time, and we were born and raised Roman Catholic, but we didn't really have a chance to start teaching her the religion and, you know, taking her to church on a regular basis or anything that she could have understood, and but yet she still came out with it.
Do you think she had been visited?
I think so. I think that she saw angels at his funeral, and I think he was telling her, "Hey, let Grandma know that I'm all right."
This is very possible, Bill. And you talked about children. That's going to be one of your additions.
That's why we want to do a chapter about children's experiences. Because, there are many, many different books and things like this that affirm that children still have spiritual vision and contact with the spiritual world or realm, which is something they have for the first 2, 3, or even 4 years. But gradually it fades in our very materialistic culture, because it's parents will say to their children, "Oh, don't talk about that." And they'll hush them and say, "That's not an okay topic." So they lose it.
Parents do that. They kind of wash that away. What's your favorite chapter in Hello from Heaven?
Mine?
Mm-hmm.
I love them all. I guess the last, next to the last one is what we call A Necklace of Pearls. And those are the longest accounts.
and they're very intricate, and they are truly, truly moving accounts. And they really touch people's hearts.
You two did a great job on this, not only with the book, but the research behind it.
Thank you so much for that. What I would like to say is that what my goal here is that hopefully that the after-death communications will be regarded as a natural and normal part of life. And again, if 60 million to 120 million people have this, why shouldn't they be? And I think they deserve the same public awareness that near-death experiences have received. And I'm especially excited because they provide modern-day evidence for life after death. And from my point of view, they confirm that when our body dies, we simply make a transition from this physical world to a continuing existence in a spiritual realm, and that there we'll have joyous reunions with our deceased relatives and friends who can and do communicate with us now. So basically, there's one essential spiritual message that is through this common denominator of all of these experiences, and that is that life and love are eternal.
Bill, my friend, you have earned your way as a regular guest here on Coast to Coast. I like you. So you you make sure you stay in touch with our producer, Lisa, okay?
I would love to do that, and I'd like to have you I'd like to have your readers, your listeners, look at a book called Backwards by Nancy Danison, D-A-N-I-S-O-N. Title of the book is Backwards, and it continues where Hello from Heaven leaves off.
All right, and Bill Guggenheim is our guest. We'll get him back again. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Tim Banal, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.